Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. This is our seventh episode, and today's guest is Ariel Nissenblatt. Ariel is basically a human podcast. She runs a podcast recommendation newsletter, a podcast version of that newsletter, a podcast about podcast trailers, and a daily tips podcast. She also works full-time at the video and podcast editing company Descript, running community marketing. I spent an hour with Ariel talking about why you should not start a podcast, how she broke into the podcasting industry, and plenty more. As always, thank you for listening and enjoy. For the listeners, who is Ariel Nissenblatt and what do you do?
Yeah, good question. I guess my main thing is podcasts all the time. And the reason I am stumbling is because I try to challenge myself to introduce myself differently for every interview because it gets boring for me, but it also gets boring for the listener slash reader. So I am obsessed with podcasts. Everything I do revolves around how am I going to listen to the next one? How am I going to help you find your next favorite podcast? And how do we grow the pie of the podcast space? So I'm constantly thinking about that. I work full-time for Descript, which is a recording and editing video and audio software. I manage the community there. And on the side, for the past 7+ years, I've been running a podcast recommendation newsletter called Earbuds Podcast Collective. And along with that newsletter comes a podcast about podcasts, which is called Feedback with Earbuds, and a bunch of other podcast-related projects. I manage a Discord for podcast creators and lovers. I have a podcast about podcast trailers called Trailer Park, the Podcast Trailer Podcast. I have a daily podcast called Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You with Ariel and Ned, 1 minute long tips for your life. And I speak on a lot of panels and do a bunch of keynotes about podcast marketing mostly, but also about podcast discoverability and anything as it relates to podcasting. And then I also do some consulting on growth strategy and marketing for podcasters. And also
nice.
Love to tell people if their idea is viable or not. So I do a lot of, you know, Ariel, can you listen to this first few episodes and let us know what you think? And, you know, is there actually a market fit for this? And then I get to say whether it's shitty or not. So I love that.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say the word podcast so many times in quick succession.
This is my problem.
So when I was looking at your website too, I was like, okay, where do I start? Who is this person? Like, where do I dig into to find things to talk about? And I was like, there's 10 links that you have there on like things you're doing. And I'm like, are these all things
and
she's doing
updated.
Right now? Like,
I should update that.
Yeah. Well, but when you were just saying it, it's like, this is so many things. And like, that's, I don't know. But anyways, so before we get into all those things, I don't want to like repeat things that I've heard in other interviews. People can go, I mean, surely some of the things will be repetitive. But one of the things that I did hear was that you got into podcasts like in 2014. You had this job. People were listening to Serial. You wanted to, you know, join in the fun and get into it. And like ever since that, you know, you bit the fruit. That was the moment that you became addicted to podcasts, as it were. Not to use such harsh language, but
addicted.
Yeah. Addicted to podcasts. Anyways, so
no, but
3 years
it's
later,
true.
Though,
I am.
You are addicted to podcasts. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 3 years later, though, you started the newsletter, and I understand it was like, and you started the podcast 2 years later. But I think with the newsletter too is like you kind of wanting to make sense of like all this consumption you were doing around podcasts and organize it and navigate it. So I'm curious, was that just the goal when you started the newsletter back, which was 7 years ago? Was it just like I am listening to too many podcasts? How do I make some sense of this?
Yeah, it was. There are so many podcasts out there. I'm afraid I'm missing out on some great ones that could absolutely change my life, whether in positive or negative ways. And I wanted to make sure to be aware of all of those podcasts, but also to make other people aware of those podcasts. At the time, I wasn't necessarily thinking, how can I help the individual creators who are making these really great podcasts that are not getting the attention they deserve get the attention they deserve? But that ended up being a byproduct. And now it's something that I really stand by. Initially, it was, I listen to 5 or 6 podcasts every week. I love them so much. I keep hearing about new ones that are coming out. People keep telling me about their 5 favorite podcasts. What if one of their 5 favorite podcasts could be one of my favorite 5 favorite podcasts, and it could change my life, right? So if we could expand that, can you imagine the possibilities if everybody could listen to everybody else's favorite podcasts and maybe hear an idea that sparks something for them?
Yeah. You said you listen to like 5 to 6 podcasts a week. How many
no,
hours?
No. Hours podcast? A day. Hours a day.
Hours. You listen to 5 to 6 hours of podcasts
yeah.
a day.
Yeah.
What? That's
five
that's,
to six
I mean,
per week would be
work.
Nothing.
Yeah, I listen to like 3 a week, and that's like 3, like maybe 3 hours a week, and okay. maybe sometimes more.
That technically makes you almost a super listener. I think super yeah. listener is technically 5 hours a week.
Okay. Yeah. I only started getting into it too, like right at the beginning of the pandemic. I was like, it's time to get into podcast. Like,
hell
I need
yeah.
to actively get into podcasts. And now I'm, you know, almost a podcast addict. I'm a podcast addict.
Hell yeah.
I'll admit it. But anyways, so going back to the newsletter and like how it's the goals have changed over the years and like the performance has changed. Cause I think I counted 846 issues of the newsletter.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
I've sent
so
it
what's
out
changed?
Every single Sunday night since February 13, 2017. And I say Sunday night, but sometimes it had to get sent on Monday mornings because of like weddings or like, you know, you're busy. So sometimes things happen, but in some parts of the
people
world, it was Sunday. How has it changed? It's always been 5 podcast episodes on a theme each week curated by a different person. Anyone can curate a list. So that is like the main tagline is I have a submission form. You can submit to your heart's content. You can include one of your own episodes if you're a podcaster or if you work on a podcast. The 4 other episodes within your list should be according to that theme and that fit well with your own episode. So that has always stayed the same. I have over the years experimented with different other segments in it. So when it first started, I did a lot more community notices up at the top of the newsletter. So I would say, here's what's going on in the podcast world. Here's what I'm up to. It was very much more from my perspective. And now I've kind of taken out the I and I speak more in terms of we. Generally speaking, the idea is that it is from a larger organization. And by larger organization, I mean me, my trusty podcast and newsletter coordinator, Devin DiComo, and our editor, Abby Kleonsky. Abby has been with me since 2017, since we started. She's just been pro bono editing for me. So I appreciate her very much. She's just a good friend. And Devin is a recent-ish college grad. She went to grad school for journalism, and she loves the podcast world. So this is a great opportunity for her to be involved and to, you know, get emails from people who are making really great things and look for opportunities that way. I've hired 3 or 4 people, 3 people throughout my newsletter existence that have helped me put together the newsletter. And my goal for all of them is like to get them jobs in the podcast space elsewhere. Obviously, it's great if they stay with me for a long time or want to, you know, have this as a side gig while they do something else. But I really pride myself on connecting them with other people in the podcast space or being able to write recommendation letters for them so that they can get the job of their dreams. So it's been really fun kind of like giving myself a people management role in all of this as well.
Yeah, I respect that kind of thing of like, just try it, just do it, see what doors open up, see like what I can do with it. So there's like so many threads that you just said that I want to pull on. But first, before we move on to that, I do want to talk for a second about the podcast component
sure.
of earbuds and like why you started that and
yeah.
how that's changed as well, if it has.
Oh, that's changed a lot over the years. So when I first started the podcast, it was October of 2019, and it was essentially me reading the newsletter out loud. And it was bad and it was boring. And it was like my mom listened to it and she was like, Ariel, this is boring. And I was like, I know, that's the point. And she was like, no, that's not a good point. And I was like, okay, heard. I will see what I can do with that. So shortly after that, I started interviewing each week's curator and asking them why they chose this theme and what got them into the world of podcast listening. And do they host a podcast themselves? If so, what got them into that? And more questions. And the interviews would sometimes be 45 minutes and I would have to condense them into, I wanted them to be around 15 minutes, sometimes even 5 to 7 minutes. And I did that for like a year and it was a lot of work. And I was editing using Audacity at the time and I was not doing it efficiently. I'm sure, you know, that now that I use Descript, it would be much, much easier. But at the time I did not have my systems in place. I did not have my workflow. So it took me forever, in addition to having a full-time job and a bunch of side gigs. So I decided that I needed to find a middle ground. So after a year of doing the interviews, I ended up going to an asynchronous interview situation, which is what I am currently at, or at least was at before the hiatus. So now the way it works is When somebody's list is selected to be featured on the podcast, Devin DeComo, who is our newsletter and podcast coordinator, sends them a list of questions to answer. So it's basically, what's your name? How'd you get into the podcast space? Tell us about the theme that you selected. Why'd you select this theme? Go through each episode and tell us a little bit about it, and then anything else you'd like to add. So then it ends up being me at the top of the show, welcoming them, sharing any podcast news, letting people know what's going to happen in this episode. Then we press play on the interview with the curator. Then I come back and I sort of do the sponsor ad reads, any podcast tidbits and things like that. And that seemed to be a nice middle ground, enough for me to have had conversations with these people, even if asynchronously, enough for me to give added value to the sponsors, and enough to say that I have a podcast. And as somebody who works in the podcast space, I like to be able to keep up with technology in the podcast space. So I use different hosting providers. I use different ad insertion technology. I like to be able to test around and share that information with my clients, you know, in other aspects of the podcast world. So it is, it's been a great experiment to have this podcast, and it will continue to change. I'm actually in talks with somebody right now to potentially do like a branded podcast for their podcast hosting company, but with my podcast as like the main crux of it. So we would potentially be like Feedback with Earbuds sponsored by this company.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, there's like so many things I want to pull on, but for a second, because we just have to get this out of the way. One thing that I'm always thinking about is like the idea of what is a creator, and like, what does it mean to be a creator? What's the implications of creating, et cetera, et cetera. So I would love to hear your definition of creator broadly. And then I'll share mine and we can go back and forth on it.
Yeah. The word makes me bristle, and I'm sure you get that a lot, right? Because it's sort of, it feels self-indulgent to be like, I am a creator. I think it's just somebody who makes things. Like I don't even necessarily know that it needs to be somebody who makes things consistently or somebody who makes things well. You can be a shitty creator and still be a creator, right? People have called me a creator, but it's not something that I necessarily identify with. I think creator often gets paired with video or maybe audio, less so with writing. But I think all of that is, and I think the word creator is also very much a byproduct of like the digital creator world, even though you can absolutely be a creator and be like somebody who's painting. But, you know, that's just less so how we use it nowadays on the internet. I think a creator is somebody who wants to always be innovating and trying new things to potentially reach new audiences or to further give value to their existing audiences. For me, I am just constantly, like I said, thinking of ways to grow the pie of the podcast world. And for and within that, I'm always just like thinking of ideas like what can I do that will get more people exposed to podcasts. Last year, my friend and I, Lauren, she's the founder of Tink Media, which is a podcast growth agency. We decided that in April of 2023, we were like, let's go to Washington Square Park in the city, in New York City, and hold up signs and ask people their opinions on podcasts. And so we got like a video crew to come with us, and we just interviewed people for a full day. We probably talked to like 75 people. We said to them, what is a podcast? Where do you listen to podcasts? What do you listen to? Why do you listen? What's stopping you from listening at all or more? And we made some really fun video content from it. And that's available on social media. But, you know, that is not something that I do consistently, but definitely would, if you saw that, be like, that's a creator, right? Like that, that's like the typical definition of a creator who like does man on the street interviews. Yeah. But I don't know. I think it can be so many different things. And like I said, I bristle at it. But I think that for me, it's just I am always trying to make things that reach people or reach existing my existing audience or new people to bring them into the fold of the podcast world.
That was amazing. Okay. One, kudos to you for doing the Washington Square Park thing. I have also literally done that
for
my last job in a clown costume. It was terrible. It sucks. It's hard. But
okay, we did it on our own. Like nobody asked us to do it. We were just like,
yeah,
let's go.
That's you're a glutton for punishment. it's like, okay, but no, so you touched on a lot of things I want to talk about. So one, I think for me, like my interest is obviously like I create this thing called Creator Spotlight. So for me, it's like who it's about, like, who should I interview? What kind of questions should I ask them? And like, that's my interest in figuring out like a definition for this or like definitions for it. But I think you're right. And like many of the things you said where it's like, Number one is just basically somebody who's creating content, and it's more associated with video, somewhat with audio, less with writing. And I think with video, because it was like originally a YouTube term that YouTube came up with. And like with writers, like, it, you know, there's always been writers, journalists, bloggers, whatever you want to call that. So there was already a word for that. And with audio, it's like there was radio hosts or like musicians, you know, and that's a thing. And so, but with videos, people weren't really calling themselves, like, cinematographer isn't such a word that people use so frequently. So I think that, I hadn't really thought about that, how like breaking it down into those media. I definitely think you're a creator because you're doing like the things that I've basically pegged as like my three tenets of what is a creator, which it's getting to the point where I need to refresh them and like rewrite them. But they are like, number one, and this is the only thing that really matters, is they're creating content and distributing it online consistently.
Online.
Number two, online. Yes. Because I think like in the sense of like the creator economy, like it has
to be. The way that we're using it. Yeah. We're not saying like you go and you set up an easel and you.
Yeah. You're creating stuff, but like creator.
Yeah.
Which then it's like, actually, as like an aside, it's like capital. Then if I'm trying to make it like a capital C, I actually don't want. Exactly. So I can't do that, which is like, that's another thing about the word. And another thing about it too, is like, it's flattening in a way that's almost offensive to people who make stuff. Cause it's like, no, I'm a writer or I'm a podcast. I'm not a creator, but it's like, so it's like a catch-all word. But anyway, so number one is the consistently creating and distributing content online. Number two, and I think this one also gets a little fraught, is, and I've been starting to question it more, is like they're independent. There's like a direct relationship with the audience as opposed to a middleman, like a journalist who publishes for the New York Times.
Right.
They are accountable to that organization more so than they are to their audience or themselves. And number three is they're monetizing it in some way. And this is the one that matters the least, because I kind of put like a big net on it. And I think this is actually where it becomes interesting relative to you, is like that monetization could be not even just ads, though you do sell ads in your podcast, but like a way of like pushing forward your career or like creating opportunities for yourselves. Where with you, like, as far as I understand, you started Earbuds in 2017, and then it wasn't until about a year later that you got your first job in podcasting. And to me, it's like, that's a direct connection where like you were monetizing the newsletter. I don't know if you had ads then, but you were monetizing it. By then, it was allowing you to get a job in what you wanted. So is that true that, like, number one, before we get back into like all the definitions of what is a creator, did you get your first job in podcasting by having a newsletter about podcasts?
Definitely. When I initially started it, I used it to go to podcast conferences for free, you know, advertising in the newsletter in exchange for free tickets. So when I got to those conferences, it was all about, like, I was willing to do anything in the podcast space to say that I worked in the podcast space. I wasn't even really sure what I wanted to do, whether it was like be a host, be a journalist, be a, I don't know, producer of some sort, or to be more on the business side of things. I had no idea. I really just like wanted to be in the industry and then figure it out. And when I got to these conferences, I really just like went to every single table booth at the expo hall and shook hands and took cards and then followed up so goddamn diligently. Like, I was like your typical definition of like, here is what to do to network at a conference. like really professional schmoozer. And I, you know, followed up with coffee. Can I buy you a coffee so that I can learn more about how you got to where you are in your career today? That type thing. I absolutely was able to point to the newsletter in conversations with people to say, like, this is a thing that I do on my own. No matter what, nobody is paying me to do this. I will always do this because I genuinely love it. And I think that that is now something that I look for when I'm hiring people, whether it's for my newsletter or for other things that I'm involved in. I want to see that you're a self-starter. I want to see that you genuinely love this industry or whatever it is that you are doing on your own. And would you be doing this on your own? And I'm not saying do free labor, but I am saying, show me that you are interested. Show me that this is something that you love. And I'm definitely not saying do free labor. Like, I monetized pretty early on. Like, it's definitely possible. So yes, I can point to the newsletter to say that it's gotten me every job that I've gotten in podcasting, or since 2018.
That's really cool. Cause like you were saying, like, don't do the free labor, but when you're doing it for yourself, it's like, it's an investment in like maybe getting a job related to the thing you're doing, cause you're showing a proof of concept and maybe getting a job down the line. One other thing I want to talk about my definition of the creator that I am like not so sure about at this point is this independence clause, especially cause I think with podcasts, like so many of the huge ones are like, you know, in a part of like podcast networks, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, but that's still a creator, I think. So I don't know, what do you think about that idea of like, does a creator have to be independent, or like, what's the relationship between them and like a middleman?
I don't know. It's really hard because I'm thinking like with Descript, we have an amazing YouTube channel. There's the main guy on the YouTube channel, his name is Ramdi, and he makes, once a week, he puts out a video for Descript, right? But it's for Descript. But if you were to see those videos, you'd be like, that's a creator. But at the same time, would those videos happen if he wasn't working for Descript? No, you know, they'd be different. He'd be making something else. It's a tough question. And I think if earbuds were, let's say, acquired by like a larger, let's say Amazon Music acquired earbuds and was like, we want you to send out a newsletter called Earbuds by Amazon every Sunday. And it's going to feature podcasts and always point back to Amazon links. And once 2 out of the 5 podcast episodes that you choose should be Amazon exclusives and whatever, would I still be a creator? I think so, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, me, like I do this for Beehive, and it's right. Like I'm building this kind of independent thing, but I'm like a quasi creator, marketer, journalist. Think, and like, I'm not really sure what I am.
I think so. I think you are. I think it's a larger question. And also, I guess you have to zoom out and say, why do we care? You know?
Yes.
Like, why?
I mean,
is this...
I care because I care about the inside baseball, but like, why does
anybody
else care?
Yeah, but what are we ultimately getting at? You know, it's what implications does it have?
Well, I think the implications that it has is like, I'm always interested. I always ask people, what's your accountability to your audience, or like your responsibility to your audience? Because I think that's
I think
what it
transparency
comes down to me.
Is important in that case.
Yes. Because like, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting is like, if the second something is aligned with a brand, it loses authenticity unless you are so open about it. Like right now at Descript, me and one of my coworkers, Ashley Hamer, we're working on a podcast / video show that's going to be twice a week. And it's going to be about like tips for creators, very quick, like 2 to 3 minutes every episode. And what we decided pretty actively was that, yes, it's going to be from Descript and there will be some Descript branding in it, but we want to avoid being like, I'm Ariel from Descript and I'm Ashley from Descript. We're just going to be Ariel and Ashley, because the second that we are from Descript, it seems like we are in the pockets of Descript, which we are, but ultimately we are also hoping to help creators make things. And yes, some of the tips are going to point back to the Descript blog. And yes, the backlinks are going to go back to the Descript blog. But ultimately, we are making sure that we are also equally showing off resources that are not Descript. So it's sort of an interesting, like, we are creators on our own. And that is something that we say, Ashley and I, in some of our discussions. But we are also creating for a brand. And I think the language that I chose there, I am creating for a brand. I am a creator. Maybe it's a branded creator. I don't know.
Yeah. No, a couple things there. One, like, I read, I don't know if it was just some tweet or like this essay in this essay collection I've been reading that I read this past weekend that was making the argument that like Gen Z doesn't like The Matrix as much because like a conceit of the movie The Matrix is that it's about selling out and this very 90s culture of selling out. But that being a creator, like everyone today, being a creator is selling, you're selling yourself to an audience, or, you know, there's nuance to there. But for a second, let's say that being a creator is like selling yourself to an audience and like to monetize selling ads on yourself, like whether it's in your newsletter, your podcast, whatever. So I think maybe it's, that's part of it, is like you can be a creator for a brand because that's just been, that's become so normal, and that's like how you monetize as a creator is like, it's just this, you, this understood relationship between brands. But do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, do we all hope that we could create independently? Yeah, but sometimes we have to get a paycheck, you know? And like, I think that if you get to be a creator consistently and do 80% of things without oversight from a brand and maybe 20%, like I'm guessing in your situation, this is a lot of your project right now. Like, you get to ask me the questions that you want. You get to ultimately decide who gets featured on Creator Spotlight, but it's going to be branded as Beehive. And like, that is okay with you because it means that you get to do this work.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is.
Anyways, let's go back to podcasts and newsletters. So you started a newsletter first, and then you did a podcast, and you are on record as not being a reader.
I don't read.
Me, I'm a big reader. That's why
I wish I was, but I can't. I can't.
Yeah. That's my whole thing. I was good at English class in school because I was a reader. So that's why I'm now a writer. Hmm. But I thought it's so funny that you started a newsletter as a non-reader. But
if you look at my newsletter, it's very much,
it's not a lot of words.
It's very bullet pointy. It's very, it is made for people who like to skim, and I am okay with
that. Yeah. Podcasts and newsletters. How are they the same? How are they different?
Yeah, there's a lot of different podcast newsletters. There's podcast recommendation newsletters, podcast industry newsletters, and then podcast newsletters from brands that are like vaguely associated with that brand or very associated with that brand. Yeah. And sometimes they maybe do creator spotlights, and then sometimes they do like podcast news, and here's why it relates to you as a user of this product. There's so many newsletters. I subscribe to as many of them as I possibly can. Do I read all of them word for word? You bet I don't, but that's okay.
But you open them.
I open them and I click the links because I am a good newsletter friend, because I've been in the newsletter world for a long time, and you click on those goddamn links. Do your friends favors. It's good to know where your content falls in relation to other people who are making things on similar topics. Should you be responding to those things? Should you be going in a different direction? Should you be refuting them? Should you be screenshotting them and posting them on social and saying, I disagree or I agree? You know, how can you use existing content for thought leadership? So yeah, a big fan of podcast newsletters.
Where do you get subscribers from usually? How do people find you?
I started a Slack channel with other podcast newsletter writers. So we pretty consistently share on each other's newsletters. We have like a system where, hey, do you have inventory in your newsletter to promote? Great, let's do it. I'm also on a bunch of different like newsletter aggregator sites like Mecco, and I don't know, there's so many of them where you can like find cross promotions and things like that. So I have a few of those going all the time. Sometimes I buy ads on For the Interested, which is a newsletter from his name is Josh something.
I've read that one.
Every once in a while, if somebody recommends a good place to buy an ad, I'll test it out if the price is right. That will bring me some subscribers. I also pretty consistently post on social and try to make my social posts not just like new issue of the newsletter out now, but like give people a reason to click on it. And then Beehive makes it really great because, you know, you're scrolling through and it gives you the pop-up that's like, would you like to subscribe to this? Yeah, hell yeah, I would.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about growth for a second. We have a survey for this newsletter. One of the questions is, what would you like? What kind of stuff would you like us to talk about? The number one, I think it's like 30 some percent, is growing an audience, which I think is like the most difficult thing to do. And like my whenever like people reply to the welcome email and ask me, I have like, I can only give so much advice because I get all these replies. So like, I hand type them out. I respond. My pieces of advice are, number one, just make good content and put it out consistently, because like everything else is just a magnifying function on that. Like that's all that matters really at the end of the day. I think other people might disagree with me, but that's like my personal opinion, is you should put out good content anyways. But then it's like you have to either sell ads or be on one of these other platforms, engaging in conversations and being social. Like you say, like looking at what are the other podcast newsletters doing? Do I disagree? Can I like post a screenshot of that and talk about it? I don't know. Like there's no, in my opinion, there's no like golden key to do it. It's just be consistent, do good stuff, and like try all these other things. And some of them will work. Most of them probably won't. You see what happens. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way. And I think I say this with podcasts too. If anybody tells you that there's one way, then they're a marketing guru bullshitter.
They're trying to sell you a course.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's every single person has a different playbook to grow their newsletter, to grow their podcast. I think if I had all the time in the world, would I be finding a contact at the New York City subway system to try to get a QR code put there? Hell yeah, I would. That would be the way. Like all of the different, and would I love to put a QR code up on like in LA traffic? Yeah, hell yeah, I would. Those are some of the things that I would do, but I don't have all the time in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to do that, if anybody wants to do that for me, I have so many ideas. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to help me implement those ideas, let's go.
The appeal with the creator economy and with being a creator, and I think it's a little misunderstood, is that it's like It's like a lottery that you can increase your chances of winning through merit and through bootstrapping. And I find this, like, the stories I write, I think I, you know, I only have so much feedback to go on, but I think I get a better response when it's somebody who has like totally bootstrapped their growth. And that's what people want, because that's what people want to replicate. But I think it's also like, it's a little misleading, because as you've talked about before in another interview I listened to, where you were like, it's easy to make a bad podcast. It's hard to make a good podcast. But I think that to me is like another one of the few fundamental truths of what, how the creator economy, how being a creator is at least understood by people who want to do that, is it's like a way to win the lottery, the algorithm lottery, maybe, let's say, with like social media, but you can increase your chances with a little bit of hard work.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. There are some shitty newsletters that do well because they have really great marketing, you know, and really great landing pages. So maybe they have a really great sign up rate, but really high unsubscribe rate. There's also a lot of people who are not in it for the long haul. You know, they do a really great job building something up and they just can't stay consistent with it. And the thing is, like, my newsletter might not be better. It might not be bigger. It might not be this. It might not be that, but I will do it forever. You know what I mean? Like, and that's one of my strong suits, is like, I am committed.
So this reminds me of another thing you'd said in a recent interview, where you had like gone to a movie and somebody came and you met somebody who was like, oh, you work in the podcast business. I've always wanted to start a podcast. And you were like, as if it's like a puppy.
I was like,
as if people always wanted to have a puppy. Well, but I think what's interesting there is like a puppy is like having a podcast, because you're going to need to have it for, you know, 10 to 15
hopefully,
years, and
yeah,
you have to take care of it, hopefully, or it dies. So I don't know. I think it's actually a great comparison. But I want to like hear you talk more about like this, who should not make a podcast? When should you not make a podcast? Should anyone like who like wants to make a podcast not? Like,
I don't know, because like, imagine if you were like, oh, I work in book publishing, and someone was like, I've always wanted to have a book. What the hell? Like, who says that? Oh, I work in newsletter. I've always wanted to have a newsletter. Why does nobody say that either? Like, I don't know why it bothers me so much. And this is a conversation that I've had with a lot of people. And I think ultimately the reason it feels so cringy is because podcasts are so, you must self-promote. You must constantly be saying why you are special and different. And a lot of times people are not special and different. They're making something that is similar to other things. And you just need to find a way to stand out. And a lot of the times the reason you're not standing out is because you're not a student of the craft. And if you were a student of the craft, you would know that your show is a lot similar, is very similar to other shows in your craft. But if you listen to other shows, if you like did the time, if you took the time to do the research, took the time to be subscribed to newsletters in that niche, to be subscribed to podcast newsletters, you would know that like there are a lot of podcasts about leadership among, I don't know, Fortune 300 companies. And that's fine. But how is yours going to be different? How is yours going to be different? Mm-hmm. So I think like, should everybody have a podcast? I'm of two minds. One is if there is a podcast that will get a specific person to become a podcast listener, I'm all for it. I want more people to listen to podcasts. So the more podcasts that are out there, the more likely they are to find the perfect person to listen to that podcast. However, at the same time, there are so many shitty podcasts out there. And I just wish that if people were going to start a podcast, I'm not saying that there needs to be like a barrier to entry. I love that there's no barrier to entry. I wish more people took the time to learn about the craft before diving in. Nobody who is a writer doesn't love books or doesn't love the idea of writing, or, you know, I think, I've always wanted to be a writer, so I have a bunch of favorite authors. I've always wanted to be a podcaster. You should have a bunch of favorite podcasters.
Well, I think this actually goes back to what we were just talking about before, where it's like a lot of people want to win the podcast lottery, but what you need is to like, you need to have a topic you want to write about and the medium, you should then pick the medium. It's not about like, I want to start a podcast. It's like, I love llama farming.
Right.
And so I want to tell people about it. And
that's
so then
inherently
I'll do a podcast
visual.
Or whatever.
I would go with something visual in that situation.
Yeah. Maybe not a podcast, but you know, you get the point, right? It's like, it's, you need to like have something to talk about.
Yeah. The idea should be there first. What pisses me off is I've always wanted to have a podcast. Okay. Great.
Cool. Who cares?
Yeah.
Okay. Podcast community stuff. I think in my last job in like content marketing was what I did. Community was this buzzword. All these startups always want to have community, 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 community. It's something that you would agree that not every company or podcast or whatever needs to have. But what is community in the way that it's something you work with? What is your podcast community work? What is that?
So what community means for me personally is anti-gatekeeping, I think, is like, for me, I have this knowledge. I make sure that I stay aware of all of these things and I want to share all of that stuff. What it means for me in my full-time job, so I work at Descript and I manage the community there, it means that we have a community of users who use the product to different extents. Some people are business users. Some people are individuals. Some people will never make a dollar in their life. Some people are making all of their money making podcasts, making videos, using Descript. So my job is to figure out how everybody is using it and figure out what they want to learn and how they want to be highlighted and all that kind of stuff. So two different things. But I think when we're talking about creating community around a podcast, creating community around a newsletter, it's really a buzzword, because ultimately what you're saying is it would be great if everybody could build a quote unquote, build a community around their podcast, but not every podcast, not every newsletter is made to have community built around it. Like if you have a quick 5-minute daily podcast about the news, what am I going to do? Talk to you about the nuances of that news. Like I would much rather be part of a community. Like one of my favorite podcast communities is Who Weekly. It's a twice weekly podcast with extra Patreon content about celebrities. And I am not your typical person that you would think is interested in celebrities, but these people are fascinating. They've been doing it for so long, and it's actually really about PR and who gets covered and why they get covered. And it's fascinating. And they just do such a great job funneling people to their community and creating inside jokes that you want to be a part of and live events that you must attend. And I decided a few weeks ago to pay for their Patreon because I needed more, you know, and it's interesting to keep track of what makes you want to subscribe to something and what makes you want to follow the call to action. But their show lends itself to community because they are doing something extremely unique that people want to be a part of. There are too many people that can't get more than 500 downloads per episode, can't get more than like 2,000 newsletter subscribers, can't get people to show up to like Zooms, can't get people to leave them ratings and reviews on Apple. Those people are now also trying to create a community. It's too many things. Like if you can't get your desired community to like write back to you on an email, it's going to be very hard for you to funnel them into a third place.
Mm-hmm. Be humble about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that struck me when I was looking into your background is like on your LinkedIn, your first two jobs after college were very much like explicitly these kind of community things. And I wonder if like, because again, it's like not just anything should have a community, but I think also not just any person is like good at managing that. So like, is there something about like the core of who you are, like something you learned in those early jobs after college that like makes you an expert in this or like just better at it than other people?
Maybe not from these jobs, but I think I learned pretty early on that most people are bullshitting all the time and that should be called out. And that also I'm bullshitting and that you're bullshitting and like everybody's bullshitting a little bit.
That's
and
life.
Like the second that you start, like I go to conferences all the time and most people are surface leveling their talks. Most people are like, here are the top five things to do this. Like, I'm sorry, but the things that you're saying are the top five are like kind of bullshit and like they're not actually helpful for anybody. So
they're sound bites.
I just try to, when I'm speaking, whether it's in an interview like this or on stage or anytime, I just try to give clear takeaways. And I think that has just made me very tell it like it is. And I think that is what people are attracted to when it comes to me and the things that I create. I try as much as I can to like be a weirdo, like to just be myself, which is weird.
Yes. No, I fully agree with that. One more community related thing I want to talk about is you are on the board of the Podcast Academy. You're up for re-election right now. Anybody listening who's part of that, 1 week left. unfortunately, this will go out after that after that vote. But anyways,
it's so okay. There's 11 spots and 12 people running, and I think I'm
amazing.
I think I have a good shot.
What does the Podcast Academy do? And like, what can it? What is impossible for it to do? What's the potential there?
Yeah, it's a good question. Right now, the Podcast Academy is the body that creates the AMBYs, which is the awards for excellence in audio. So if you are a member of the Podcast Academy, you can submit your show/shows for awards. You can vote. You can vote for the Board of Governors. You can be part of the Slack channel. You can be part of the mentor-mentee program. And then there's all sorts of these cool discounts that you're eligible for when you become a member of the Podcast Academy. And there are also really great events that are member exclusive. I think the idea, what is possible, is the second that you decide that you want to start a podcast and you have an idea for a podcast, and there's a reason it should be a podcast, and you Google how to start a podcast, ideally, the Podcast Academy should pop up. You should become a member of the Podcast Academy. You should be funneled into like a beginner's track. You know, you should be able to choose kind of where you are on the spectrum of beginner, intermediate, expert, whatever. And that, you know, totally up to you. And then within this funnel, you should be able to get information about hosting providers and lessons for vocal stuff and anything that you might possibly need. This is where I think the Podcast Academy could go. I also think that it further professionalizes the idea of audio as entertainment and advocates for podcasting on the whole as a medium to be taken seriously. And what I mean by that is, like, let's have more awards at larger, you know, Webbies and places I think the Podcast Academy could and should be advocating for podcasting to become more professionalized. So I'm also part of an organization called the Podcast Taxonomy, which is an international multidisciplinary effort to standardize roles and credits in the podcast space. So, like, what is a producer? What is an editor? What should they be paid? What should they be paid in certain places? How much work should they have to do for X number of dollars? Things like that. And obviously, these are things that would constantly be changing, but it would be nice to have some sort of baseline. So the Podcast Academy, theoretically, I think could be the organization to take that on and say, this is what is happening. And this is how we can be fair to creators. The danger there is, right now, what's so beautiful about podcasting is that you can do whatever the hell you want, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are no rules. A pre-roll ad doesn't have to be 30 seconds. It can be a minute. It can be 14 seconds. It can be 36 seconds. Mid-roll ad doesn't have to be right at the 50% mark of the show. It can be sort of in the middle, sometime after the pre-roll. And these are things that are not available to you in film and TV and in radio, because those things are highly regulated. So that is something that I love about podcasting. So while I do advocate for making things a little bit more streamlined, I also definitely want to keep the beauty of the let's do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you for that. I like that kind of conflict between like the ability to do what you want and then like the idea of like regulations or standards is tough. Like, I think with newsletters too, I've talked to some people who have local newsletters, and there's a ton of more people out there doing that, and it's like, you know, when you have that, you lose like the New York Times or whatever professional news organization. They have editorial standards and all these checks and balances and stuff, and like, you know, still those are flawed, but like you get some kind of standardized way of like reporting what is, you know, ostensibly the truth or a point of view. And so, like, I don't know, with newsletters, that's something I think about a lot, where it's like, you have a responsibility to your audience. And like, again, all that really matters is being transparent and like saying like, this is my point of view or whatever. And I like to think that people have like an increased level of media literacy to understand that now. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, because I don't know. Anyways, a totally fraught thing. If you have an idea for a podcast or a newsletter that you think somebody should start, that's just on the table, that you're not going to start. So I'm asking you, is there like a podcast you think somebody should start?
I have three podcasts that I would like to start. And I don't want to give any of them away. Although one of them is so away. It's been so given away. I had a tweet go viral in 2021.
I see it right here. It's Yeah, that's a great idea.
And it's a great idea. The tweet is a podcast where parents try to explain what their adult children do for a living. I would love to make that show. I would love to get funding to make that show because I don't want to make it on my own. I really want to have a mm-hmm. partner. I really want to have a distribution partner, but also a creative partner. I'd be okay with giving up some creative freedoms in order to do it right with the right person or right company. And I do think it could be a branded podcast. Like, I think that it could maybe be with like Indeed.com or whatever, some sort of job creation website, but also it could be like one of those memory preservation companies that creates stories out of, you know, I think there's a lot of directions to go in with this. So I'm looking for the right partner for that. I do have a deck and I have conducted a few interviews for it. And that tweet is interesting because it's from 2021 and every 6 months it goes re-viral. The meme accounts repost it. And
I've seen it before.
Yes. Like, yeah. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice thing that happens in my life because people reach out to me and they're like, this got posted in my group chat. This got posted in a newsletter. And I'm like, great, let's go. Like, who am I popping up on that that like hasn't heard from me in 10 years? I love that idea. So that is something that I would like to make. A podcast that I would like other people to make actually just got made this past 2 weeks ago. It's called Finally, a show that's not just a thinly veiled aspirational nightmare. And the idea is it's created by this woman, Jane Marie. And she's produced on This American Life. She has a company called Little Everywhere. She makes a show called The Dream. She's such a great writer to speaker. And what I mean by that is like, it's clear that she's reading writing, but she does it in such a beautiful way that makes you addicted to the way that her voice sounds. And she's just great. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend checking out the things that she makes. And this new podcast is not hosted and not narrated. And it's just a drop in to a different woman's life for a full day in their life. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we are almost out of time. So maybe one more question before a little bit of plugs. You've been doing this in the creator economy for 7 years now. And I certainly don't know what I'll be doing in 7 years, let alone in a year. I don't think you do either. Maybe you do. But anyways, let's say in like 2 to 3 years, what's your dream for where you are? Maybe like professionally in like a full-time job, or are you creating full-time? Where are you in like 2 years? What's your dream for creator economy stuff?
I want 500,000 subscribers to my newsletter. I don't see a reason why it shouldn't be the case. There are, by some estimates, 50% of the U.S. population listens to a podcast every month. So they should be subscribed to my newsletter. You know, at least a percentage of those people should be subscribed to my newsletter. I think within that, if I had all the time in the world, all the resources in the world, I would segment that list so that you could subscribe for podcasts about different topics. I would have a more robust way to put the podcast together every week. Like I said, it's on hiatus now, partly because I am tired and I have a lot of things going on. But you're asking me like a career question that I grapple with all the time, right? Like, do I want to be somebody who is on camera talking about how much I love podcasts? Do I want to be like the podcast recommendation person in the world? I don't know. That'd be cool. Right. But, I don't know. I'm pretty content doing earbuds on the side, but it's like a strong side piece, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's one that I feel very attached to. And one that allows me to constantly be in conversation with creators, but also listeners, and also keep up with what's going on in email marketing, and also keep up with what's going on in social media marketing, and also podcast marketing. It's like one of the best things I've ever done for myself is start this newsletter. It's probably the best thing I've ever done for myself. I can't imagine anything else that compares. Like I love doing it. In 2 years, the newsletter will be bigger. The podcast will be bigger. There will be more podcast listeners out there. There will be more podcast creators out there who are making good stuff and who have really good onboarding sequences so that they are making good stuff faster.
Shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
Shoot for the moon, land among the stars. Those are some great dreams. Okay. Last thing. Plugs. Where do you want people to find you?
The newsletter that I am here to discuss is at earbuds.audio. And we have embedded Beehive sign-up forms right there on the website, so you can check that out. I think the direct link to the Beehive newsletter is newsletter.earbuds.com. No, newsletter.earbuds.audio. My email address is ariel@earbuds.audio. Try to make it very easy. So if you have questions about you know, what to listen to, but also maybe you want to create a podcast and you want some validation on if that's a good idea or not, I can tell you. I'm very active on Twitter still, and I don't call it X. You'll notice it's Ari, this and that. Becoming more and more active on Instagram as a backup, Ariel, this and that. And I do have a website, arielnissenblatt.com, but that's really, I just have that so that I can own the domain.
This has been episode 7 of the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Thank you, Ariel, for joining me. Thank you, listener, for sticking around to the end. And if you enjoyed it, it would mean a lot if you rated us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I'll see you next week.